When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Thank you so much for joining us for your ROH and TNA review. Thanks for bearing with us while we were a couple minutes late there. Had a lot going on, and we have a lot going on headed into our pay-per-view. Not a lot announced, but a lot on the build. So get in those super chats. Some exciting news today, or not so exciting, depending on what side of the tracks you fall on. But I find free agency exciting, so I'm excited to see where Dijak may end up. News about that broke on FightfulSelect.com earlier. Check out Mansoor and Mason's stream after you watch this, of course. But they have him on talking. And now you can also check out his interview with Sean, which will be dropping at noon tomorrow. So tons and tons going on over here at Fightful and FightfulSelect.com. Please leave a thumbs up on this video. And please get in those super chats if there's anything that you want to comment on regarding ROH, regarding the direction of the product in general, tonight's episode, and of course, the build to Slammiversary on the back end of this. But SP3 holding down the fort for me last week while I got to see some of these matches live, got to see some AEW Collision last week as well. How you doing, SP3? Thank you so much for stepping in last week to the hosting role.
I tried my best to fill in. You had some big shoes for me to fill. I didn't fit my entire foot in it, but I did my best to make it a fit. And shout outs to Astrid, who did a great job reviewing the show with me last week. She was wonderful. But I missed having Kate by my side, and I miss providing the folks with my Ring of Honor vintage list. And now they're going to be back this week because I'm in the co-hosting position.
Hell yeah. I'm excited for those lists. I'm excited about some developments that we are getting in ROH. We're going to talk about tonight's episode. I initially got excited because it was an hour and 49 minutes long listed. And I was like, we've got like almost a 2-hour episode again. I guess we're really pushing the build. And it was just the same broadcast twice in a row. But that's okay, because we did get some interesting stuff on tonight's episode. The main event I thought was fantastic. That is one I got to see live. It was unbelievable. Kyle Fletcher, Will Ospreay is going to have like a 5-year reign, I think, before Kyle Fletcher starts creeping up on him for like best in-ring dude in the world, probably. But him and Briscoe having a really fun teardown match in this. Some movement in the women's division as well. And then some of our same complaints sticking around, staying true, but overall, decent enough episode. And SP3, before we dive in, I also want your thoughts on, we're getting some tapings, some consistent tapings that are going to require actual planning. I'm having a hard time getting my hopes up because we've done this so many times, but it does feel like when we get pre-tapes with plans, it's not a Collision's Leftover show. It feels like a real build into the pay-per-view, forever hoping they actually keep their foot on the gas. But do you have expectations around the pay-per-view build or these tapings? What do you think about us getting like a full month of consistent planned out programming?
Well, like last week, I said last week that was like the best episode of Ring of Honor television. One was the length being an hour and 40 minutes. It left a lot of room for, you know, different long length matches, whether it was like Titan versus Aaron Solo in the opener. We had two title matches on the show. We had a in front of the fans promo segment with Athena and the special MIM emergency meeting. So that was really good and really strong. And I like the follow-up this week, where it felt like two back-to-back episodes that kind of were in line with each other, because a lot of the Ring of Honor television kind of can be all by itself. Like, you can miss one week and then come back the next week and you wouldn't know what happened the week prior. But there was a great follow-up, whether it be with the Athena story, whether it be with Layla Hirsch and Diamante. You had Kyle Fletcher, who had the best Ring of Honor TV matchup this year against Lee Johnson, follow it up with a title shot in the main event against the world champion. And we finally got the world champion back on the show. So it seems like we're getting some type of cohesion as we're 1 month out from Death Before Dishonor. And I have high hopes for when they get to Arlington and they're actually doing solo Ring of Honor tapings. I was like, oh my God, this is, we're going back to the Universal Studios day, the peak of Tony Khan, Ring of Honor. I'm with it. I have tentative optimism going into Arlington.
Cautious optimism is the name of the game. I am with you there. But SB3, I think the elephant in the room is last week's episode was episode number 69. If there was ever going to be one to turn it around, if there was ever going to be a nice episode, it's that episode. But speaking of 69, Minion 690069 right here. Enormous asking, why wasn't I in the opening promo? Listen, I am a minion that does what she's told. I was not told to be at TV. Had I been told by Athena, had I been told by one of her consiglieres, her proteges, to be there, I would have taken that as a direct order from her and I would have been there, but that's not what I was told to do. So I'm staying here and getting paid to talk about wrestling, hanging out with SB3. That's a good Thursday night.
You were in the crowd, though. You were present. You were present for the emergency mimp. So
it's
you
true.
Were technically there, but they didn't need you in the backstage promo because Athena has strict orders. You know, I'm one of the minions in training. So I'm trying to get my number up there, my number in the Raptors. And I wasn't there. So, you know, I'm going to have to get demerits for that.
Sure. It's a pecking order. You know what I mean? Yeah. Your time will come. Your time will come. But just Ricardo saying, hey, SP3 in chat, you are loved. Well, thank you so much. That's so kind. How was ROH? It was pretty decent. We're going to get into all of that. But you saying you are loved does remind me that we are coming up on the end of Men's Mental Health Awareness Month. And one, this is a safe place to be. It's also the end of Pride Month. You're safe here as well. We encourage you to take care of your mental health in whatever way you need to, as long as it's not something that hurts others. Get the help you need. You don't get bonus points for doing this shit alone. That is for sure. So, hey, no shame or stigma around these parts. We love taking care of your mental health. And we love Lee Johnson and Alex Reynolds in this opener match. You said we got that really, really great 2 out of 3 falls match. Lee Johnson, kind of one of the few men's singles competitors that feels like he's being built into something. Some fun stuff with Alex Reynolds here. I loved kind of the repartee between them of Lee Johnson, like, getting speed up and Alex Reynolds kind of just noping the whole time. Like, it felt like he was doing everything he could to keep Lee Johnson just from building his explosive offense the best that he could. But this ends with Lee Johnson driving Reynolds' face into the corner so he can kind of set up some separation for that big shot drop and get the pin. The only bummer with these ROH tapings is sometimes you get a crowd that's not warmed up yet, and sometimes you get a crowd that's fatigued. The crowd was not there for a lot of this until Evil Uno was inviting them into being there. Which was a bit of a bummer, but the match itself delivered. I think this is just to keep the momentum of Lee Johnson going. It certainly feels like we're setting up for a Mark Briscoe, Kyle Fletcher program here. So I don't know where Lee Johnson fits as far as what his next title shot will look like. But one of the most improved talents overall. We've been kind of beating that drum for a while. Alex Reynolds, great to see him in the ring. He's always looking good in situations like this, always making his opponent look great in situations like this. What did you think of our opening contest here?
this was a fine opening contest. And like I said, this was a good follow-up from last week. The last thing we saw was that tremendous match with Lee Johnson and Kyle Fletcher. And these two guys are just two young studs. And these are two of the guys I want them to build Ring of Honor around. I think that both of them, the only thing they're kind of lacking is character. I had someone tell me that Lee Johnson has the character of water. Meaning that is it doesn't have a lot of taste to it. It's refreshing to see him, but it doesn't have a lot of taste to it. And I do kind of agree with that. I want him to show more personality, show more charisma out there. I think that's the only thing he's lacking, because in the ring, he's up there and he's improving time after time after time. Like you said, he facing Alex Reynolds is a good kind of face. The only thing I want from Dark Order is pick a lane. I want them to just either some weeks they're baby faces, some weeks they're heels. It feels like I'm watching the Blackpool Combat Club in 2023, where I was watching Dynamite and they were heels, and then I watched Collision and they're baby faces. But this is the same show with the Dark Order, and I feel like one week they're baby faces, the next week they're heels. I just want them to pick a lane and just stay in it for now. But they, like you said, they're good performers, and this was a pretty decent way to open up with Lee Johnson getting back on the winning ways and getting him on track for another title shot down the line.
I agree with you on a couple of fronts there. And the thing with Blackpool Combat Club is I felt like they could more easily make that I'm a face, I'm a heel adjustment, because it just felt like whoever they were booked against, that was the way that they went. Like, they were heel because they were booked against baby faces and vice versa. Dark Order has always been personality driven, and they've always been one or the other. They're not as seamlessly able to make that pivot. And additionally, we've seen them work as a trio. We've seen them work as a tag team, and we've seen them work as singles competitor. Get these people in divisions and let them work in those divisions. It's like, so, oh my God, so fundamental, so frustrating to see that week over week. But we continue to have this conversation of, in the overall picture, there's some serious structure lacking. But when we look at the match itself, great match. Of course, it's going to be Lee Johnson is great. Alex Reynolds, fantastic. And I think very valuable for things like this, with like a growing Lee Johnson versus a veteran who's like, there's not really a story here. You're right. The character part is kind of incomplete, but let me put something together in that way. So totally with you on that. Love to see it.
And you talked about before, you know, dealing with the mental health is men's health, mental health awareness. You know what helps with my mental health? List. And I have a special list for this edition of our Ring of Honor post show, because the main event was Mark Briscoe defending the Ring of Honor World Championship for the first time since winning the championship at Supercard of Honor. I have put together my list, the top five Briscoe's title defenses of all time. Jay, Mark, whatever, tag team, ooh, singles, top five Briscoe's title defenses. So I'm gonna start the list here with number five. I'm gonna pull it up here. I'm unprepared because I usually have this already pulled up, but here we go. Okay. Number five, I have the Briscoes versus the Kings of Wrestling, Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli from Ring of Honor, The Big Bang 2010. This is one I had to look up, and I watched during the week, because it was a funny week for me to do this, because I also watched this week Who Killed WCW, where they talked about how their pay-per-view that they were going to bring back WCW was going to be called The Big Bang. And this was in 2001. And then Ring of Honor, 9 years later, have their own show that's called The Big Bang in April of 2010. And Briscoes and Kings of Wrestling is one of like the iconic Briscoe rivalries. Like, Kings of Wrestling, Chris Hero, Claudio Castagnoli, they were just such a great team. And I really feel like that tag team led to Claudio building up a legacy as one of the greatest tag team wrestlers of all time. whether it be him and Hero, whether it be him and Tyson Kidd, him and Sheamus in the bar. We see it now with the Blackpool Combat Club, whether he's with Brian, whether he's with Moxley, whether he's with Yuta, with the hot tags. He gets all the memes of him with the hot tags. This is why Claudio Castagnoli is this generation's Bobby Eaton, or this generation's Arn Anderson, as far as like iconic tag team wrestlers. Claudio Castagnoli has it, and the Kings of Wrestling and the Briscoes, it was just a perfect matchup where you had the underdog, redneck, gritty brawlers, baby faces in the Briscoes versus the Kings of Wrestling, who had their whole entourage, whether it be Sarah Del Rey, Shane Hagedor, and they just used the numbers game against the Briscoes, which eventually led to Papa Briscoe getting involved in the rivalry. But the start of the rivalry was Kings of Wrestling beating the Briscoes for the Ring of Honor World Tag Team titles at the Big Bang. Great matchup. Go out of your way to check it out. I believe it's still on YouTube. I actually watched it on Daily Motion. I'm going way back to watch Daily these matches Motion. For these lists. So number five, Briscoes KOW from 2010.
Absolutely love that call. Absolutely love that call. Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli too, just like an underappreciated duo. I think because that whole time period was such an embarrassment of riches, it's actually kind of easy to get lost in the shuffle. And I think when you think of Claudio, certainly you think of his tag accomplishments, but he alone is such like a human freak of nature that you kind of forget like what a great tag wrestler he is. But you're right, all those hot tags are always so incredible. You really forget sometimes what a high level he's been at for so long, like for so long. Cause it feels like he's still in the prime of his career and he's been doing this for like 15 years at this point. Right. So really, really
20, cool. Something like, I remember 20, watching.
Yeah, like actually
2010 when he had the ponytail and he was still balding. Oh, in like 2000, this is like 2006. I remember him with the ponytail when I first started really like investing in Ring of Honor, buying the DVDs and stuff. So I remember Claudio from like 2005, 2006 coming in from CZW. And yeah, he's been doing it for so long, so long.
And so well, and so well. We got a chat from C. Delgado. Thank you for always being so supportive of us, saying, if Atlantis wins the TV title on Friday, he could drop it to Lee Johnson at Death Before Dishonor, and that frees up Kyle Fletcher for the world title. There is nothing wrong with that plan, except for the desperate need to have some delineation between the ROH and the AEW roster. And as long as he's part of the Don Callis family,
I thought you were going to say the Dallas Cowboys.
As long as he's a part of the Dallas Cowboys, man, I don't see him being exclusively a wrestler on either brand, really, because he's going to be on a football team. So it does feel like maybe Mark Davis is still far away. Like the interview he gave kind of makes me feel like that's still a ways off. Just gut instinct, nothing I've heard or know. But he's phenomenal. He really, really is. And I've enjoyed his reign. I just don't like watching him get squashed on AEW and then kicking ass in ROH. Like, that disconnect doesn't work for me here. Doesn't work in NXT in the main roster and the WWE world. That seems to be a consistent challenge when you have a hybrid developmental and standalone brand. We run into issues like this. But I'll tell you what, we just found out there's a free agent on the market as of tomorrow who was one of the few outstanding things on NXT. NXT has a lot of really great talent and a lot of talent that's coming along and growing. There were not a lot of marquee cornerstone talents of NXT, and Dijak was one of them. That guy put on incredible matches. He did everything he was asked to as well as he possibly could. His stipulation matches, especially, were a showcase of his ring psychology. Him coming into ROH and taking a title from someone is something that definitely has my interest. If they want to give this brand an actual, serious, legitimate creative push, relying on Dijak to do it, I think is a great idea because he's already shown that he's up for the challenge. Now, selfishly, I want him to go to New Japan. The fan in me says, get that guy's ass to New Japan. And I think New Japan needs it. They need some of these free agents. They are hurting for star power over there. They are thirsty for it. I was hoping they were going to throw a ton of money at Finn Balor, but he resigned in WWE, obviously. So I feel like him around G1 season could get really, really, really interesting. I don't care who he has to attack to do it, but like him being in the G1 would feel fantastic. But that's what's kind of cool about this open landscape right now, is who says you can't do both, right? So, but if I'm AEW and I see that guy, if you feel like the main roster is too crowded, I say you don't pass up on that guy, because he's shown that he can carry a weird brand. He's shown specifically that he can carry this weird thing that is developmental and a standalone. I say throw Dijak in the title picture. Him coming in and fighting Mark Briscoe seems like a hell of a lot of fun to me. I don't know about you, SB3, but let's recklessly speculate on Dijak for a little bit. We know his contract is up tomorrow. I'm a huge fan of the guy's work. As someone that has to cover NXT, gets to cover NXT depending on the week. It kind of feels like a chore, kind of always feels like an honor to get paid to talk about wrestling, even bad wrestling. But sometimes that show is a slog to get through. It doesn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense a lot of times. Dijak, one of those guys who connects point A and D with really great connective tissues of B and C. We lost Ethan Page here on ROH. We could certainly use someone who has that same ability here. Your thoughts on Dijak and where you'd put that guy?
I was absolutely shocked to see that post earlier today. And instantly I was just like, what was WWE thinking? Like, you called this guy up when there was apparently plans for him to be in the NXT championship program, which I've been calling for months. I called for nearly a year after that Battleground last man standing matchup with Dragunov last year. I was like, push both of these guys to the moon. I was like, both of these guys deserve to be in the main event. And we saw that eventually with Dragunov beating Melo for the NXT championship. But I was like, your money feud is right there. Do Dragunov and Dijak for the world championship. And then they just ran after Dijak got a win at a PLE. I think it was against Joe Gacy. They just randomly gave me the matchup on the next episode of NXT. I was like, that should have been your stand and deliver matchup. What are we doing? Like, what are we doing here? And it was Tony D'Angelo that eventually got the matchup. Good match with Dragunov. But I was just like, well, that seemed like Dijak spot 100%. And even despite all of that, Dijak still steals the show at Stand and Deliver with Obafemi and Josh Briggs. And yet 2 months later, he says that they didn't negotiate with him. It's just mind numbing with the fact that the two guys in 10 years ago in Ring of Honor that I was like, oh, this is the future of this company, were Punishment Martinez and Donovan Dijak. One, WWE has made and molded into a potential main eventer for the next couple of years, however long he's going to be wrestling. Right now, he still feels like a guy that has the world title with the title making him, but he is solely getting along and gaining that confidence as a main eventer. And they could have done the same thing with Dijak. The fact that they called him up to the main roster and didn't have plans with him and didn't negotiate with him with the contract, it just boggles my mind. And it's like, is this still the same WWE when it comes to evaluating talent? Or maybe this is a TKO thing? I don't know, but the sky is the limit for Dijak, whether it be in New Japan Pro Wrestling that needs gaijins in the main event, especially. He's a guy that can instantly, you just give him a big win, and he could be in there with your Naitos of the world, with your Shingo Takagis, with your Zack Sabre Juniors, with your Gabe Kids, as one of those type guys in New Japan Pro Wrestling right now, whether it be in AEW. I think that he's a guy that could be in the TNT championship scene, could be wrestling a Will Ospreay for the international championship and just consistently stealing the show and having a prominent spot on your Dynamites and your Collisions. Or you can bring him into Ring of Honor where he can have like what Claudio did in 2022, where he comes in into the main event and really holds it down and establishes the Ring of Honor World Championship as a prestigious prize again. So there is anywhere he can go, TNA wrestling, he could instantly be a main eventer over there as well. So there is so much potential with Dijak. I feel it's very exciting times. And, you know, just as it was dying down with the last crop of free agents where, you know, you're Mustafa Ali seems really comfortable with what he's doing. He's doing great stuff in TNA. Nick Nemeth also doing great stuff in TNA. You know, you got Mason Mansoor, who are just all over the place with the independent scene and potentially coming to Ring of Honor, according to recent reports. So Then you got a Dijak right now. He feels like the hot free agent that wrestling needed again. And I agree with you. It's an exciting time to think about all the potential spots he can go, or all the potential spots he can just make appearances like Mustafa Ali was doing just a few months ago.
I'm just saying, all of Retribution is free agents now. Somebody give them the bag. Somebody just run it. Somebody run the damn match that we all want to see, okay? But
I was waiting for two tweets after I saw the Dijak post. I was like, Mustafa Ali has to put a post about Retribution doing an 8-man tag. And he did that. And we needed to hear from Keith Lee, who came out of the wilderness to just shout out his boy, because those two guys became stars together just about seven years ago on the independent scene. And I would just love if Keith Lee comes out of his injury, comes back to face Dijak. Just do it. Just do it, Tony. You're a sicko. You know all sickos want to see that again.
It would be very, very quick, but we do have the ladder match that has an open spot in it that has not been addressed. We have Rampage and Collision to go. And there is a Jeff Cobb open challenge that's sitting out there. Now, it seems like that might have gotten hinted at, that my dream may actually be coming true, that it might be Samoa Joe. From what I've heard, spoilers of a Collision taping, that could be the way that they go. And I will cry. I'll just be so excited I will cry because I want to see it. But very, very interesting possibilities with Dijak. He's one guy that could show up anywhere. He has the chops for character-based work like TNA. He's got the ring rate for anywhere else he wants to go. I think there's a lot of possibilities there. But we're moving along. We've got a problem here, SP3. It ain't Dijak's contract status. It's Marina Shafir, who defeats Erica Lee, a Northeastern standout. An incredibly silly young lady when she wants to be, a little bit more serious here, kind of refinding herself a bit, but Marina Shafir hitting that like modified 619 that always looks so I love that. It looks so much more vicious to me than the original 619. And she hits that mother's milk sleeper hold and Miss Erica passing out. I love that that's called the mother's milk. It absolutely cracks me up. And we get Marina Shafir continuing to get some wins here. Now, I will say this has been a very strong women-centric brand for a while, but we have seen kind of a fall off in them building challengers. We have that excellent tournament. Hasn't been a ton of follow-up. Today we get to see Taya Valkyrie in action later. We're going to talk about that. And we get to see Marina Shafir picking up some wins, which I think is a good sign. I still am a believer of, if Serena Deeb is going to have a dojo, there should probably be students within that dojo. And Marina Shafir should be one of them. But nice to see her presentation coming along a little bit. Nice to see her continuing to pick up some momentum here. Decent enough match. No real complaints about it from me. What did you think?
Yeah, just a decent little squash here for Marina Shafir, who's building up momentum right now. And Marina Shafir, when she came into AEW, she always felt to me like misplaced or miscast for AEW and where their women's division needed to be. But I feel like she's perfectly cast here in Ring of Honor. And I like the fact that they're building her up right now, making the mother's milk my favorite finisher name. Just a formidable thing that is taking out everybody. And we just now need her to progress as we get into, you know, the pay-per-view build-up with a month out. I would love to see her get some type of rivalry or seem like she is targeting either the Ring of Honor Women's Television Championship or Women's World Champion. But I really like Marina Shafir just on Ring of Honor. She feels like one of the people you need to build around in the women's division.
I agree. I feel like they tried a couple of things, right? They paired her with Nyla, which I think initially made a ton of sense because Nyla is the native beast and she has so much personality. I feel like they were trying to get Marina to maybe come out of her shell a little bit, but I think this is better. I think this is a more authentic thing for Marina to dig into. I don't think it was that she like lacked personality. I just think that they haven't really dug into it yet. And slowly but surely, we're starting to get there, which makes me very happy. But
she's improved a lot in the last year, working on the independent scene and working with John Moxley outside the ring. So you've been seeing that as we go along with her run so far in Ring of Honor.
She was someone too that I felt like when you saw her, you were like, all the ingredients are there. She just hasn't put it together yet. Now she's putting it together. But if she was one of those ones that you're like, if you give her some time, she's gonna be really good. And I think she's pulling it together, and that makes me very happy.
Yes.
But we
She's
moved.
closing the gap from Shayna and Ronda right now.
She
I think
is. She
she's moving
is.
past Ronda slowly but surely.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to see what happens with Ronda Rousey too. I don't know if she's just done or if she's going to be popping back up places, but she's an interesting one. I know she's not everyone's cup of tea, and I get it, but she's undeniably an influence where she goes. So I'm intrigued to see what happens there. But I'm also intrigued to see like who else is on your list, SP3.
So, number four on my list of the top five Briscoe's title defenses, I went with a singles match here because I gotta give love to Jay Briscoe versus Adam Cole for Final Battle 2014, Fight Without Honor. I was there live. What is that janky building called? I forget what it's called. Terminal 5. Terminal 5.
Oh
There
God,
was the
yeah, not a great wrestling venue.
Oh my God. Terminal 5 might be one of the like top three worst places to watch a wrestling show
It's not great.
I've
It's not
ever
great for
been.
music either, to be honest. Like it's not the best.
It's really bad for wrestling. I don't know how it is for music, but it's really bad for wrestling to the point, like, they have a whole upstairs area, and that's where I sat for this show. And there's no chairs. There's no chairs at all. You just stand in the balcony. So you can go back to the show and watch it back. And I've been told this by other people who said, "Oh yeah, I seen you in the at that show. I seen you at this show on Ring of Honor tapes, and you can see my feet hanging from the turrets because me and my good friend Baby Seth of the True Heel Heat YouTube channel were very short, so we just sat down right on the floor, have our legs hanging from the balcony at Terminal 5, watching Jay Briscoe versus Adam Cole fight without honor. And their rivalry, this is one of like the great rivalries of the 2010s in Ring of Honor, from Adam Cole winning the Ring of Honor World Championship after Jay Briscoe had a series of injuries and he had to relinquish the title. And there was a whole buildup with him not wanting to relinquish the title, but he gave the title to Adam Cole after he won the tournament when Cole was just an up-and-comer moving up in the ranks in Ring of Honor. And he turned heel, super kicking Jay Briscoe right in the back of his head after he came off concussions and stuff like that. And that started a 2-year-long rivalry between the two that really culminated with this fight without honor at Final Battle 2014. Then this came after they had a ladder war that was crazy enough as well earlier in the year. And they just went out there, balls to the wall action, just a brutal contest between these two guys. And it really, this was the type of matches that really showed that Adam Cole kind of always excels in these no DQ and street fights and fight without honors. We already know that about the Briscoes and had known that at that point in 2014. But Cole was just building up his legacy at that. He really became a star 2 years prior in a similar type of matchup with Kyle O'Reilly. But this was once again in the main event this time, really showing what Adam Cole has built up his legacy to be. So Jay Briscoe, Adam Cole had to show love to them. So number four, Briscoe's title defense.
Love that choice. And man, there's just nothing like a good Adam Cole heel turn, huh? Like anytime that guy has a proper heel turn, he freaking delivers. I love it. Guys, get in your super chats. We are getting into the meat of our episode here, and leave a thumbs up on this video if you would be so kind. We're talking about it all, baby. We're talking about Death Before Dishonor. We're talking about these stationed tapings. We're talking about Dijak. We're talking about this episode and this promo where the Undisputed Kingdom is backstage, and they toy with the interviewer and their name for a minute. Arcady.
Arcady. It's like,
But we have
wait, what's your real name?
what's
What's
your
your real
real
name?
name? They can't believe it. We get Mike Bennett talking about the lack of real competition in ROH. And then he drops to his knees and says, pray to the Booker man, Tony Khan, for giving them a team that might live up to their talent. And they call out a bunch of teams, every team in the universe, in fact, that might be good enough. Heck, even good looking enough. And we get Commander and Metalik saying that they're going to face the kingdom next week. But there was something interesting to me, SV3, about them saying that they need somebody good looking enough. When you combine that piece of things with the reports from Fightful Select that Mansoor and Mason, Manny and Brennan, formerly the Maximum Male Models, very attractive fellas, very handsome lads, if I do say so myself, fantastic tag team wrestlers as well, might be coming into the picture sooner rather than later. I think them being a nice Death Before Dishonor surprise or part of the build to getting there definitely seems like a real possibility at this point. I think an excellent call. Those two guys, I can't say enough about them just as people in my interactions with them. I never feel like I actually know wrestlers, but in my interactions with them, just fantastically kind and positive and wonderful people. And two people that will do the best with whatever they're given. Like, as proven, they tried their ass off, Brendan did, in Retribution, Lord knows, and they did what they could with Maximum Male Models. They had me cracking up by the end of it, saying that they weren't cosmetically cleared at points. Like, they will do everything that they can. For the love of God, get them and Dalton Castle in the ring at the same time at some point, please. But that would be a nice shot in the arm to the tag division. And they're another one that I think they could establish themselves in ROH as champions, and they could move up to AEW, or they could be in ROH for a while and really work ROH for a little bit. I think there's just so many possibilities. One thing with Brennan or... he had so many different names at any given point. Mason, I guess, is probably the best one. But, like, people don't realize how big that dude is. That is he's a big guy. He's, like, got to be... If Dijak's, like, 6'8", he's not much shorter.
No.
You kind of... If you look at Retribution in a line, you see Mustafa, obviously, kind of, like, shorter in the front of that group. But, like, Dijak's, like, 6'8". I think Shane Haste is, like, 6'4". Like... they're all really, really big dudes. And Brennan, because his personality is so disarming, I feel like sometimes that gets lost. But he can work, man, and he can toss people around. He's a big dude. So I'm looking forward to what we're getting next week. But looking beyond that, more free agency possibly coming in, it sounds like here. Your thoughts on this promo and the implications of it possibly down the line a little bit.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Get an 11% rebate at Menards. Rust-Oleum Stops Rust custom 5-in-1 spray paint lets you choose from 5 spray patterns with a twist of the dial. It protects indoor and outdoor metal and wood projects for long-lasting results and is available in more than 40 colors. Get started on your painting project at Menards, number one in customer satisfaction among home improvement retailers according to J.D. Power. For more information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Save big money at Menards.
We got the same thing from that promo when they mentioned good looking. And I was like, oh, this might be where MXN is coming in to the main tag team pitcher. I would really like that. And I agree with you, Mason, Mace, Dio Madden. He's always been someone that has stood out to me, even when he was on commentary on Monday Night Raw and his big main spot that he did in that role with Brock Lesnar, where he made Brock Lesnar look like a dwarf. next to him. Like, he was taller than Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar can still manhandle anyone that size, but he was very impressive with this, his size. So I wasn't surprised at all when he then transitioned into the ring. And I really like these guys because they just are naturally charismatic, naturally funny. And I think that they would have a good role on Ring of Honor TV and actually have some people be watching the week-to-week coverage if they're on there, because they've had a good run on the independent scene. Earning their spot on Ring of Honor brand is something that we need. We need people that are coming just in for Ring of Honor to kind of build up the brand and make it stand alone from AEW. It's great to be a developmental. It's great that, you know, we've had people get over on Ring of Honor television, like the Kingdom, like the Infantry, and then transition over to AEW. But we need some stalwarts here that we're going to build the brand around. And a nice little tag team feud between Mike Bennett, Matt Taven, and MXM. I'm here for it.
Agreed. Two of the most creative minds you could have kicking around as well. Maximum Male Models, Retribution. They had a really cool pitch that never made it to air where they were like fixers that would be going around for other people, intimidating referees and whoever else came in their path. So just always seems like a healthy thing to have that kind of creativity in such a sports-based brand as well. So hope that is the case, but also just looking forward to the tag team match that they set up for next week, because that should be a whole bunch of fun as well. Well, in exciting news, this episode is brought to you by the No Shave Man Cave. We have a wonderful sponsor in them today. They are a podcast on their own, and they do incredible work. If you're a fan of wrestling, be sure to check them out. Hosted by Jason Tilson and Jared Ellis. Just passionate wrestling fans, and they dive into the world of pro wrestling. They had a mental health episode with Thunder Rosa this past week. They have an episode with Jake Hager coming out this next week, the first interview post-AEW. So get his thoughts. You're going to want to hear them coming up out of that this Saturday. And the Thunder Rosa interview, I checked it out personally. I thought it was really great, but every week, they're bringing you in-depth analysis of current events and matches. They go through title history, and they share their perspectives. There's engaging discussions, insider insights, and just a lot of wrestling love. They also host watch-alongs with special guests as well, and more of that top-tier talent getting interviewed at the No Shave Man Cave. Military vets, mental health advocates, really, really cool guys. Be sure to subscribe on YouTube and your favorite podcast platforms. Keep an eye out for more interviews with world-class talent. We thank them so much for their sponsorship and their continued support. Please show it back to them. Good, good fellas over there at the No Shave Man Cave. But we move along to Lance Archer and the Righteous defeating Davis, Victor Benjamin, and Gannon Jones Jr. This ends with Vincent, after some confusion, being the legal man here and coming close to getting the pin, but Dutch nailing Davis with the best boss man slam ever, man. And then Vincent hitting that orange sunshine for the victory. I love this trio. Build them up for a six-man title shot. That's it. Like, I love these guys working together. None of these matches have contendership implications. None of these matches mean anything. It's just them squashing dudes. It's fun. I don't mind seeing it. I actually really like seeing it. I would like it more if it meant something. I feel like all of those guys have earned their keep, but nobody more than Lance Archer. My God. Have them versus Bullet Club Gold, man. I want to see that. Like, that is a six-man match if I want to see. This is exactly what you would expect it to be. It's the same lather, rinse, repeat we get from these matches a lot. But are we going to have six-man belts, these unified belts in Ring of Honor at any point, SP3? I'm dying to know.
Hey, I told you, it's probably just going to be for the pay-per-view. That's what it's going to be. It's probably going to just
be. You got to face someone, though, right?
Yeah, and I agree with you. Lance Archer and Righteous are a great pick, because they are been dominant on Ring of Honor television. This was a little bit more competitive than I thought it would be because of the size of the opponent. And I'm a big fan of Victor Benjamin. I've seen a lot of his work on the independent scene, so it was cool seeing him here. But yeah, Lance Archer and the Righteous versus Bullet Club Gold, the Bang Bang Gang. It just makes a world of sense to me. And I feel like the Bang Bang Gang being on a Ring of Honor pay-per-view, they're going to be the baby faces regardless. If they're even if they're not on AEW television, they're going to be the baby faces at a Ring of Honor event because they're so prominently featured on AEW. They're just going to be popular. So it makes sense for them to go against a heel faction like Lance Archer and the Righteous.
Especially if you've got Juice Robinson involved in any way. He's just so goofy that even though they're heels, they're going to be wildly over. So I'm with you on that. But we move along to our weekly What the F Are They Doing with Trisha Dora segment. A little more protected of a loss here because I think Taya Valkyrie is a top talent on this brand. I will say that much. I got to say, Taya Valkyrie came in. She had a lot of fanfare. They had no follow-up for the stuff after Jade. She came to Ring of Honor. Her conditioning has improved. She looks more comfortable in the ring than when she arrived. She's looking awesome, and I love to see it. Because not that she didn't look good, but now she looks great. Like, it feels like there was just, like, a moment of acclimation that happened with her. And especially, I would say, since the TV tournament, like, TV title tournament for the women, it's really just, like, another level with her. But she looks like a million bucks. Her character is always so fantastic there. We get Trisha Dora with that split submission in this. It looks so genuinely painful that I love that she uses it. And it has some side benefits, too. I think they're very obvious. I don't have to dive into those. But she looks fantastic and is amazing. And she should not be facing Taya Valkyrie is my complaint, because I think they both need wins. And they should just, you clearly have enough independent talent that you just pull on. We're going to talk about our Proving Ground match in just a moment here. I don't know why nobody in the locker room wants a title shot, but a good match. I just got to wonder what the heck we're doing with Trisha Dora. But we do have Taya Valkyrie taking advantage of Trish being dazed a little bit after her head get kicked into the mat two times, and she covers her for the pin and the victory. So at least this loss was more protective, but what the hell are we not doing with, like, there's some wrestlers, I swear to God, I can't explain it, but I know it when I see it. I see them and I'm like, why are you just not choosing to make $1 million with that person? Trisha Dora is one of them. I don't get why you're like, oh, clearly there's a bajillion dollars in this person, but we're going to choose not to utilize it for some reason. It blows my mind. She's military. She's charismatic. She looks great. She kicks ass. She kicks even more ass since she went to New Japan boot camp. She, like, is such a complete package. Her promo style is different than anybody else on the roster because she has this calming but commanding presence that fits with the military. That, like, I don't understand why you're just leaving money on the table with this woman. I don't get it. Not saying that Taya Valkyrie isn't, because she is, but that's why you don't have this matchup to begin with, despite it being good professional wrestling, SP3.
Yeah, this loss here just, or this matchup in general being booked, when I saw it was on the show, I was like, so why did Trisha Dora lose to Harley Cameron again?
Yeah.
Like, she could have won that matchup, and then this makes this matchup make more sense because this is a big win for Taya to get after Trish had beaten Harley Cameron. She beats Trisha Dora. She beats Trisha Dora here, and Taya is right in line with Queen Amanada, which it seems like we're setting up like a number one contenders matchup between those two. It doesn't make any sense the way they book Trisha Dora here, where she should have a lot more because she is one of the more prominently featured women on this roster. Like, you got Layla Hirsch and Diamante, who I feel are kind of at that same level with the way they're kind of booked on Ring of Honor television. They have a little program going on, but then you have Trisha Dora losing to Harley Cameron, who's more featured on AEW, losing to Taya Valkyrie here. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And I'm not taking anything away from Harley Cameron. Maybe some people think I was hard on her after that matchup because I saw her on AEW Dynamite and she did not look out of place with Timeless Toni Storm, Mina Shirakawa, Mariah May out there, and she was honestly the best person on her team with Anna Jay and Saraya, which says a lot about her progression for someone who's had like 20 or so matches. She's getting better and better, but she shouldn't have beat Trisha Dora weeks ago. Trisha Dora should have won that match. So this match would have made more sense, but this was a solid matchup. I let Taiyo Valkyrie get in the win in a vacuum, but yes, it's a broader problem, an overall problem, the way they are booking Trisha Dora right now.
Perfectly said. Couldn't agree more. And yeah, it's not an offense to Harley Cameron thing. It's that she's had like 5 television matches. Like she should, she just shouldn't be beating Trisha Dora, especially clean. That was weird.
And especially if you're not going to put her back on Ring of Honor, like you're apparently going to use her more on AEW. So give Trish the win here. It's all about just Harley getting reps. She doesn't need wins. It's about her getting reps and being in there with Trisha Dora obviously is going to get her better. We saw that on Dynamite this week, but yeah, I think this whole Trisha Dora thing is going to be a theme for us to complain about for weeks and weeks to come, but also something that we do weeks and weeks is list.
So yes. I have
number 3 and number 2 for you because they come from the same year.
Ooh,
the year
okay.
of the Briscoes, where in my opinion, in like the modern era, and yes, I'm saying modern era for 2007, this was the year where tag team wrestling really got elevated to the main event scene. And it was the year of the Briscoes.
You said elevated. I had to. We're so elevated. I had no choice.
We saw the Briscoes elevate the tag team titles to the main event scene, and two of the more important matches that did that was Briscoes versus Motor City Machine Guns from Good Times, Great Memories in Chicago, Illinois. And I was so hyped for this matchup. Like, I went out of my way to get the DVD when it dropped because this was two of my favorite tag teams back in 2007. Love the Machine Guns on TNA. Love the Briscoes. They were my favorite tag team at this time. So seeing this matchup, I believe it was in April of 2007, I was just like, okay, Briscoes done had tag team of the year already. They wrapped it up. Within like 4 months, they were tag team of the year for me. Versus the Machine Guns, it felt like a genuine dream match of two of the best tag teams of all time. Years later, we could say they are two of the best tag teams of all time. So that one is definitely on their Ring of Honor YouTube channel. So go out of your way to see that if
go
you haven't
check
already.
That one out. Yeah.
And number 2, yeah, the greatest rivalry, in my opinion, of the Briscoes' whole career is Kevin Steen and El Generico.
Hell
and
yeah.
That rivalry in 2007, I got to be in Manhattan in the Hammerstein Ballroom to see some of their exchanges, see their crazy 2 out of 3 falls matchup at Manhattan Mayhem. But that set the stage for the final encounter, which was Ladder War at Man Up 2007. I believe this was the second Ring of Honor pay-per-view of their pay-per-view era in 2007. And man, oh man, it's just violence personified. I went on YouTube and I watched this before we went live here. I like to get some old school Ring of Honor in my blood before we start talking about things here. And I watched that matchup. It's just pure chaos because they're using some janky ass ladders that look like they're gonna die every time they climb. You can't, they do the janky ass ladders that only have real rungs on one side, so you can't.
Oh god.
And they literally had to get a construction ladder from the back to kind of like complete the matchup and complete their big spots where Generico does a package power driver onto Mark on a ladder bridge. Then you got Jay doing the J driller to Generico on a ladder bridge. And then him and Kevin Steen climb to the top. They're brawling with each other. And Jay can't even take down the titles because they tied up the titles on this little string above the ring. It's funny. It's violent. It's everything I want in professional wrestling. Go out of your way to see Man Up 2007, the first ever Ladder War, Briscoes and Stenerico. So I had to get them on this list here.
Love, love, love that choice. I will go back and watch it, but I'll watch it like this because janky ladders make me nervous. But I will go back and watch that one because it is an absolute keeper. Really incredible when you look at that era of Ring of Honor and what it yielded. But me, Norma saying, I think Trish and Taya should have beaten each beaten a Renegade twin and then had a face off. That would have made more sense. More sense, especially as we're like looking for contenders for Billy Starks here a little bit. I know we have like the Red Velvet and Queen Amanada storyline, but like other people should feel important. But one thing that I do like feeling important Layla Hirsch and Diamante here. We get her backstage discussing her match from last week, Layla Hirsch's, and then Diamante interrupts her. It says that she's here for a fight. So we're going to get a no-holds-barred match between Diamante and Layla Hirsch, which I'm very much looking forward to because it feels like it's in Diamante's wheelhouse, and I haven't seen Layla in that kind of match before, I don't think. So I'm excited to see what happens between the two of them in that environment, because I feel like sometimes the stuff that Layla can do gets interpreted as pure, like more pure wrestling and not violent, but you suplex people into ladders and shit, it gets real violent real fast. So I'm excited to see what that combination yields for us, and excited to see them continuing to do interesting stuff with the women's division. Like, this isn't for a title, but it does have a stipulation on it, and they built up something with a little bit of heat on it. So I'll take it, SP3. What do you think?
AEW, Ring of Honor, doesn't matter. I love me a non-title women's feud. So I'm all for this. And I love the story of Layla beating Diamante 4 times in a row. And this is Diamante's way to kind of get her win back or just completely be dominated by Layla Hirsch. So I like the kind of the option there that we can have the rivalry completely finish, or we can finally have Diamante get a win here.
I agree. And I was thinking about this because there was an article that came out that said that Tony Khan had said that AEW is the best women's division in the world right now. And a year ago, that would have been laughable. And I thought about the amount of progress that's been made basically since Wembley of last year, I would say. And all of the things that have improved, those non-title stories, the title stories, not just being Challenger of the Month Club, the enhancements of the division from a talent perspective as well, just getting some more marquee names in there to balance out the younger talent, the stars that have gotten made and Julia and Willow and all these things, and also the role that ROH has played in that, because ROH had never been a women's wrestling brand before. Not even close. Not even close. Saying there's a wide gap there is very nice. No offense to the women involved in that, but it was not a priority. And to see Athena become the face of the entire brand, and also the room for other women to come and establish themselves and other women to grow a little bit, has been something that's really cool. And I know a lot of people, self-included, have had so many frustrations with ROH, but it becoming a women's wrestling brand is one of the coolest things about it. I would say. So some cool things happening there. I like my title adjacent stories too. I would like a story for this title though, because Billy Stark's just beating a bunch of people in Proving Ground matches, ain't it? I think they are reworking maybe some things that had been planned because of Athena, but Billy Starks versus Angelica Risk, who we've seen a couple of times, looks fine here. But I like what Starks has done from a storytelling perspective. You could tell she was looking over her shoulder a lot for Aminata and Red Velvet, but she wins with that hammerlock submission. I can't say enough about Billy Starks' transition from an in-ring perspective to being a heel. Like the adaptation of a move set to being heelish when she was doing she's so influenced by backyard wrestling and stuff like that to lean into this violence has been really, really cool. What are we doing with this title though? Are we reworking it because of the Athena injury? Are we still going to have the match with Red Velvet? Why aren't we building other contenders for it after Red Velvet? Why do you have a roster in your locker room, like a full-on group of women who have no interest in having a Proving Ground match for a title shot, but independent person number 7, no offense to Ms. Risk or anybody else, why do they just get a Proving Ground shot when none of the women who have been getting wins backstage get one? None of them even have an interest. None of them have cut a promo wanting a title shot or a Proving Ground shot. I just don't get it. It's a continual frustration. once again, what we actually see from an in-ring perspective is very good. But I don't know why nobody in the locker room has an interest in this title.
It's just very weird because in the same amount of time, Billy Starks won the Ring of Honor Women's Television Championship at Supercard of Honor. Same show where Mark Briscoe won the World Championship. And on this show, we got Mark Briscoe's first title defense. Mark was away because he had a kid. He was on paternity leave, and he was away from Ring of Honor for a while. He had a reason to be away from Ring of Honor. But in that same time, we also had Kyle Fletcher having a bunch of proving ground matches. But since then, he's defended the title against Dalton Castle. He's defended the title against Lee Johnson. And then he has a match at CMLO with Atlantis Jr. So he's going to have three title defenses in the time that Billy Starks has had zero. So it's what are we doing? What are we doing? This would have been a great spot, Tony, to give Trisha Dora a title match. If you want her to lose, just have her go against the champion at least. If you're going to lose to anybody, have her lose to Billy Starks. It's weird. It's just weird booking of this title so far after the great work that they did with the tournament. It's just very weird, the follow-up.
During the tournament, Taya Valkyrie had said, like, it's made for me. My name's Taya Valkyrie. It's a TV title. Like, she could have easily walked in to having some sort of, she could have had a multi-match story with Billy Starks for this. I don't, because they're both heels, I guess, maybe they don't want to, but it's just, it's very, very odd. Very nice to see Mark Briscoe back. I understand he was on paternity leave. This is the first time since November of 2023 that the title has been defended on ROH television.
Wow. That's a while.
It's too long, SP3. But man, oh man, what a match we got. I got to say, between Kyle Fletcher and Mark Briscoe, this was at the taping that I was at. It was wonderful to see live. This was actually what aired before Collision. This was the first thing that we sat down to watch. And it got us kicked off on the right note. It was very, very, very fun. Fletcher having that same technical but hard-hitting thing that Will Ospreay has mixed in with athleticism. He's just such a weapon in so many different ways. And then you combine that with Mark Briscoe, just violent and hard-hitting. And I love him mocking Kyle Fletcher early in this, getting in his Karate Kid crane move there, which was really, really fun. A lot of Dem Boys chants. There was a little girl behind me who was screaming my ear off for Mark Briscoe and for Orange Cassidy at that taping. But what a blast this was. We get a Jay Drilla to win it. This was just fantastic. This is how you have Kyle Fletcher have a meaningful loss, which is something they have not accomplished in AEW. But this was just fantastic. I love that Mark Briscoe used what he had to his advantage. And it felt to me kind of like in our opener, like he was just going to do everything he could to stop Kyle Fletcher from getting a one up, keeping his pace in check, just going to try and hit him with as many hard hitting moves as possible to not let Kyle Fletcher get on a roll. I loved this main event. I thought it was fantastic. What did you think? Were you as hyped on it as I was?
Really damn good main event between these two guys. They had good chemistry, and I like the story of the matchup being that Fletcher really studied the game of Mark Briscoe. He was ready for the Froggy Bow. He reversed the J-Driller a few times. He was ready for all the different moves that he hit, and then even when he hits the Froggy Bow, he got the great near fall on that, and he was awesome as far as his facial expressions. Like, his facial expression when he got the near fall on the tombstone was great, and then his awesome, amazing facial expression when he kicked out of the Froggy Bow and you saw like the desperation in his eyes getting his arm up. That was just really fine-tuned stuff where you see him evolving before our eyes. And back-to-back weeks, he's had two of the best Ring of Honor TV matches of the whole entire year. This was just quality stuff. Him and Mark Briscoe have developed good chemistry from all those amazing all-star tags that they were having on AEW, and you saw a little bit of that here. And I still need some Mark Briscoe drunk redneck head coach promos, but let's get some on Ring of Honor here. Let's get someone, because it might get old on AEW if you do it every week, but you could bring it over to Ring of Honor, where we haven't had a Mark Briscoe promo since he won the world title. So give us some of that.
I mean, KOR said he was going to follow him wherever he goes, and that could include Ring of Honor. I don't understand why it wouldn't, but really, really fun main event tonight. Really, really fun main event tonight. And since we've got a couple minutes to play with before Joel and Cresta get on here, there was one chat that wasn't a super chat that I did want to call up because we just haven't had a space to talk about it yet. But Charlie says, okay, I know this is the ROH review, but I haven't seen you since the Jeff Jarrett promo. What did you think? I personally thought it was incredibly effective. Effective meaning like I was affected by it. Like it was really, really, really well done. The people who were like, he's going to win the Owen. He's not going to main event Wembley. He is going to evoke a tremendous amount of empathy for who it seems like is going to be Hangman Page to come back and beat the ever-living crap out of him, which mission accomplished, right? My guess is we're setting up for a Hanger and Danielson finals. Both of them have very clear intentions on why they would want to get back to Swerve, why they would want to get to Wembley. Really, really good stuff. But I thought it was a really great way to educate an audience who might not know, first of all, about the relationship between Owen Hart and Jeff Jarrett, and also to build up some emotional connective tissue for him being in the spot going into the Owen. And I see that somebody, Joel, said, wow, Jeff Jarrett super Stan Kate. So what I'm going to do is just go ahead and delete that little comment there. SP3.
Love it.
What were your thoughts on this?
Just a very earnest, genuine promo that just got some real like quality emotions from Jeff Jarrett. And it was honestly, out of his 600-year career of Jeff Jarrett, this is one of the best promos that he's ever done. Like, it was just, especially the long length one, the 9-minute one on the YouTube channel. Like, that's the one to go see, because it was good what we saw on Collision, but that was just like the tip of the iceberg when it comes to this, him really putting it all out on the line, really talking from the heart. And I understand the people that just was like, oh, give him everything, give him the Owen, give him the main event at Wembley. That's not going to happen, because the Elite have chosen the wild card, and that wild card is basically getting a bye where he's going to beat up Jeff Jarrett and get a lot of heat. So I'm happy. Hangman Page, it looks like I wanted this. I was like, once I saw the Owen bracket, I saw the wild card spot, and I didn't see MJF there, which was my original pick to win the Owen. I was like, okay, that's Hangman spot. Hangman comeback, win this Owen. Hangman and Swerve for the world title at Wembley Stadium. That's what I'm here for. So that's what I hope is going to happen at Beach Break. But Jeff Jarrett, just an amazing promo, one of the best of his career. And since I know Joel is backstage, I know Cresta is probably backstage already, I will give you number one of the top five Briscoe's title defenses, and you won't have to go too far back to watch this one. Briscoe's versus FTR, Supercard of Honor 2022, Dallas, Texas. Just one of the greatest tag team matches in Ring of Honor history. One of the greatest tag team matches of this decade so far. And the Briscoes FTR rivalry, just top to bottom, one of the best tag team rivalries of all time. It was just so much blood, passion, determination, two of the best tag teams of all time going at it and just bringing their A game to try to elevate not only the Ring of Honor World Tag Team titles, not only their own legacies, but they were also elevated the Ring of Honor brand overall. Now that Tony Khan owned it back in 2022, purchased it just a month before this matchup. This match was kind of like the tip of the cap to us old Ring of Honor fans with the passion that these two teams put on display in Dallas, Texas, stealing the entire WrestleMania weekend, in my opinion, that weekend. This was the only 5-star matchup I saw that weekend, and it still holds up to this day. So that is the greatest Briscoe's title defense in Ring of Honor history.
I certainly can't disagree with you. I feel like their entire trilogy was just an absolute love letter to the art of tag team wrestling. Genuinely, and you could have picked any one of those matches and I would have been like, yep, that's the way.
Well, that It was defenses. So they didn't defend the titles in the other two matches, or that would have probably made the list, and it would just be FTR and Briscoes. I would just be ranking
all three. Well, we are gonna flip it over to the TNA crew as they build to Slammiversary.
I love you, Grandma. Bye. Sorry, Grandma, call me.
That's okay. We're going to welcome Cresta and her grandma onto the show, which I love.
I'm not Cresta's grandma.
Grandma Star.
It's nice to meet you. You kind of look like Joel Pearl.
Yeah, a little bit. It's
been a long time coming.
My goodness. How was TNA tonight, guys?
Wrestling transpired.
Check out our interviews with the new TNA signees, Sinner and Saint, and with Giselle Shaw, both of whom were not on tonight's show.
Wow, it seems like you're really bad at landing interviews, is what I gathered. But
TNA gave us those interviews.
It's what we got. We work with what we got.
Is Slammiversary this weekend?
No, Slammiversary is next month. It's July 20th.
Okay, I was going to say, because we make the joke like, hey, you have a special every week. But I was like, that is.
This weekend's Forbidden Door.
Yeah, it's Forbidden Door this weekend, and then they're in Philly tomorrow, Friday and Saturday, for Impact tapings. And those tapings are going to take them all the way to Slammiversary.
Yeehaw.
And some of the people missing from those tapings are going to be very missed because they are in major title matches on Slammiversary and are currently halfway across the world competing on an Australian tour. I need to go now.
Joel is stressed.
Well, au contraire, sir. SP3 and I need to go. You guys need to talk about some TNA Impact, but please leave a thumbs up. Please continue to show support to Joel and Cresta via Super Chat and Humper Chat. I'm going to hang up and listen.
Thanks, caller.
Later, y'all.
Take care, SP3. Get
thanks, thanks, caller.
Yeah, it's like, I'm gonna hang up and listen.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.